Auburn has won the Iron Bowl!
We welcome you to Jim Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
It's the Wishbone Podcast, your source for Auburn football discussion and commentary. Now, here are your hosts, Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer.
Yarder. It's got, no, does not have the leg. And Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone. He'll run it out to the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game. He ran the missed field goal back. He ran it back 109 yards. They're not going to keep him off the field tonight. Holy cow! Oh my God! Auburn wins! Auburn has won the Iron Bowl! Auburn has won the Iron Bowl in the most unbelievable fashion you will ever see! I cannot believe it! 34-28! And we thought a miracle in Jordan Hare was amazing! Oh my Lord in heaven!
Hello and welcome to the Wishbone Podcast, brought to you in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. I'm Van Allen Plexico. I'm on cloud 9.5, and I'm joined as always by my probably equally delirious co-host.
I'm Chris Davis. No, I'm John Ringer.
I thought so. I thought I made the right call. Okay. John, I have seen things that I don't believe. I'm still wrestling with reality and what is fiction and what is real. You said we could do it. I had my doubts. I will not have any more doubts. This team could beat, you know, the Giants, the Eagles, whoever, if they decided to. Something would happen. The earth would swallow up the other team. I don't know. I don't even know where to begin. We've got a lot to talk about tonight. We've got a lot to get through. We've got to look back at one of the greatest games in Auburn history, period. And we have to look forward to our fifth SEC championship game appearance ever and talk about that matchup. And we have to talk about history and fate and destiny and the power cosmic and all that good stuff. So where do you want to start?
I think we have to start with the last play.
I may have seen it a couple of times.
I have to say, I have watched that replay about 100 times, especially the version with the Rod Bramlett. And every time when Stan White starts screaming in the background,
yes, yeah,
it just gets to me.
Yeah.
Every time.
I think my favorite part is when Rod is trying to hold it all together, and then he just goes, "Oh my God!
Holy cow! Oh my God!"
And somebody on one of the other on ESPN or something said, "If that had been the team that was losing, he'd have been fired, you know, or something for saying it that way on the air." But I've got a few things to say before we get into the play itself. While we're still talking about the meta of that play, right?
Mm-hmm.
I left the TV on ESPN from first thing when I got up Sunday morning until Sunday night. I just had the TV on in the living room on ESPN all day while I was doing stuff and my family was doing stuff. Mm-hmm. I kid you not, 9 out of every 10 times I walked through the living room all day, at least 9 out of every 10 times, they were talking or showing that play. I mean, every show, every time. In fact, I even went through that morning and flipped around all the ESPN channels and recorded little 8 or 9 minute snippets where they were talking about it on the sports reporters. They were talking about it on the Sports Center. They were talking about it on College Football Final. They were every show you can think of on those channels, they were showing it or talking about it. And here's what is really surreal about it, okay? So yesterday it was all the sports shows on ESPN. But today, it's like The View was talking about it. Yeah. Fox and Friends were talking about it. NBC Nightly News. Everything.
It definitely, you know, sometimes football crosses the boundary to when regular pop culture and, you know, is aware of what goes on in football. And this play crossed that line and then crossed the next line to, like, you know, your grandmother who doesn't watch football and doesn't own a television knows what happened.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's at that level where, like, you know, anybody, anywhere knows about the play and was talking about it today.
Well, for example, I got an email from Keith DeCandido, the science fiction writer, writes the Star Trek novels, and he's like, I care. He's a big Yankees baseball fan. He lives in New York. And he's like, I care less than nothing about college football. Amazing for a New Yorker. He says, but I just couldn't believe this. And he had a bunch of comments to say to me, which was cool. The provost of my campus today came in and just stood in my office door and was talking about it. You know, he's actually a Missouri fan, so that's interesting. There was another one. I got an email in the Pulp Writers group where somebody said, hey, did you see that Auburn, Alabama? They even misspelled Auburn, but they were like, did that Auburn game? And I'm like, yes, I did. I mean, you know, I had people saying, hey, I didn't know if you happened to be watching that game. I'm like, yeah, I thought I might turn it on just for the heck of it. Mild interest, you know. So you're right. It went out to the third level of people that weren't even conscious of it until after the fact and went, wow, that was amazing. So and what that means is this wasn't just, you know, in some – and I'm going to talk about where it fits in, and we're going to in a minute, you know, in history. But it wasn't just that Auburn played in a game of this astonishment magnitude. It wasn't just that Auburn won a game of this astonishment magnitude. I mean, this could have been a Florida game, an LSU game, and still been amazing, right? Or Georgia, you know, a couple weeks ago. It's that in this game, this particular game, with everything on the line, a game of astronomical magnitude, effectively a semifinal of the national championship in some ways, it happened. It's just like all the stars aligned at once.
It's so true, because especially so often in those kind of games, games between highly ranked teams with so much hype around them, the game itself is disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
They're just never that exciting.
90% of Super Bowls.
And this game lived up to the hype. It was outstanding.
It vastly exceeded the hype.
All right, it did.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it just it was beyond anything that anybody could have ever expected, especially. It's almost like people said, well, you know, such and such happened at the end of the Georgia game, so therefore the immutable laws of the universe and the galaxy mean that nothing spectacular can happen in this game. And Auburn, you know, Chris Davis, the Auburn Tigers, said, yes, it can. Watch. We can warp the space-time continuum again. And if you thought the last one was amazing, yo, y'all, watch this.
It was nothing.
Yeah, that was nothing compared to what we're about to do. Boom. A few other things before we get into the actual, while we're still talking meta, all right, the stuff around the game, the media and everything, the impact. I wanted to mention a couple other things. Paul Feinbaum's show, I haven't listened to it in months and months and months. In fact, I only, you know, people used to say, why you listen to it all? I'm like, I live in freaking Illinois. I have to take what I can get. But this was before, that was before our network came along. Now I can just listen to our network and whatnot, not have to deal with it. But I listened to Feinbaum for about 45 minutes today. And I have to say, it was sweet indeed. It was the Auburn people just crowing, just rubbing it in their faces, and all those horrendously obnoxious Bama people just having to take it and take it and suffer. And I heartily approve of Bama people that are obnoxious and mean and horrible suffering. I'm all in favor of it in this way, in this emotional suffering. I even tuned into the Bama Sports Radio Network, one of our sister or I guess little brother program networks on our Auburn, you know, the War Eagles Sports Radio Network. And that was very interesting because those guys are pretty young, and at least on the show I was hearing, and they were really struggling to kind of put it in context, but I thought that they were pretty fair about it. So I give props and credit at least for not being, you know, the kind of people you hear on Feinbaum, but they were still pretty depressed and messed up, and my reaction to that is good. Mission accomplished.
They're spoiled by winning.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, and they have to look around now and just kind of come to grips with the fact that this is not the universe they thought they were living in. So
no, and that, you know, how about this? The best days of that may be behind them.
And the best days for us, what do you think?
Down the road.
Oh, man. I mean, you know, I look ahead, and I know that everybody says, well, you know, we got almost everybody coming back next year, give or take. Is there any possible way next year can be better than this year?
It can't be more entertaining, and it can't it will never have that
astonishment factor?
Well, it's just the simple joy of a team that was so bad.
Yeah.
And those players, you know, deserve so much to have something good happen to them after all their hard work. And the fans who sat through those games last year deserve to have something good happen to them. I mean, look, I sat through that Arkansas game last year. That was awful. Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, in that stadium, that was a terrible performance. And so that part, you know, is what's so sweet about this year is coming from the depths. Next year will be a preseason top 10 team and all that kind of stuff. And they'll do great things. And there'll be exciting games and great plays and it'll be fun, but there'll always be something particular about this team that I'll always remember. And also these two games, I mean, endings like that don't happen.
Right.
I mean, it's a, you know, I remember watching TV when I was a little kid in my parents' house, and I saw the Doug Flutie play live. And yeah, I remember some of those. I watched the Oklahoma Boise State bowl game and the ending, the Statue of Liberty play and stuff at the end of that game. And you know, that's the way people are going to talk about these plays. So
yeah, will there have ever been a team whose expectations going into the season went up so dramatically from the beginning of one season to the beginning of the other? Because this year we were praying for 6-6, right, in a bowl. And what are the expectations going to be next year?
Win the SEC.
Man, that's I mean, think about that.
Sure.
And I mean, yeah, we won't have that shock every week of, can you believe it? Can you believe it? It's going to be more like, oh man, why didn't they beat, you know, such and such by more? Or I can't believe we almost lost to so-and-so, or who knows what. And, you know, next year we won't have Alabama and Georgia at home.
No. So, I mean, that's the thing is, like, this has been an incredible season, but, you know, in some ways, Auburn's going to be great under Gus Malzahn for as long as he's there. They're going to be really well coached and well prepared and recruit well and you know, compete with SEC teams. As we said, the day he was hired, the days of getting their brains beat in by 30 points are over.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean we're going to win the national championship every year or anything. That's kind of silly. So.
Right. So, though there will be people going into next season expecting us to do even better than this year, and I just say enjoy what we have and hope for the next thing and just go with it, you know. Let's talk about that play. I mean, we still haven't even gotten to the meat of the program, but we just got so many things to cover. I want to get on into the play. You know, on our show 2 weeks ago, we sort of walked through our perceptions moment by moment on that pass. And I'd kind of like to do that now with the very last play of this game, which, honestly, John, I still can't wrap my brain around that was the last play of the game. That still doesn't seem like that happened. I can't quite come to grips with the idea that we didn't go to overtime, that they didn't win by making a field goal, that somehow they came out to win the game and we won. That just doesn't happen.
Nope, not like that. Not ever.
That's like if the Braves are batting in the bottom of the ninth and they hit the ball and somehow it gives the Red Sox a run.
Yep.
It doesn't compute. I don't know. Well, anyway, how did you perceive that play? I mean, what were you thinking kind of moment to moment?
Well, I guess the first thing is I was relieved that they were kicking. I would have been much more worried if they had sent out the offense. I really felt like, you know, it was a very long field goal and they were sending the backup kicker who's been sitting on the bench for 4 hours. freshman in that stadium with that intensity and all that on the line, I thought his chances of making the field goal were about 10% really.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like the chances of McCarron with those receivers, if they sent them down in the end zone and threw the ball down there, that they might be able to make something happen. I thought it was at least about the same to me.
Mm-hmm.
Think
about this. Let me interrupt you for just a second because you brought something to my mind I had been thinking about earlier. What had to have been going through Saban and the other coaches on that on the Alabama sidelines head if they weighed their options, right? They weighed what was the best. They did a cost-benefit analysis in a few seconds there, which you're paid to do millions of dollars to do this quickly, right? They did a cost-benefit analysis and decided that their best option was not to go to overtime. They were willing to take the chance on that kick and bad thing that could happen because they did not want to go to overtime. They had more confidence in trying to win the game in a 57-yard field goal than they had confidence to win the game playing us.
No, that's not it. If that was the case, they would have taken a knee. But what the kicking the field goal was, they felt like they had a legitimate chance to take it and that they had practiced the execution of covering that kick, covering somebody returning it enough that the risk was minimal of somebody running it back.
Well, I'm not understanding. You said they'd taken a knee. They take a knee, you have to go to overtime. They didn't want to go to overtime. My point is they didn't want to play us anymore. They didn't want to go to overtime. They were willing to take a shot on a 57-yard field goal to try to avoid having to play us anymore.
Right. Their goal was to win the game. Their figuring was, you know, in their mind, maybe it's a 20% chance he makes it. And within their mind, the chances of anything bad happening were like 1%.
Mm-hmm.
So then you got in their minds, you know, it's a 20% chance to win the game versus a 1% chance something bad happens. Go for it. I mean, they practiced that field goal and they practiced the guys running out to cover sideline to sideline to make sure nobody could bring it back. And so it wasn't like they had never seen that before. It just worked out where Davis brought it back.
But they were making that kick with the ball starting on the 40. If they had just taken a knee or let the clock run out, they'd have been kicking that. They could have been kicking the same kick from at minimum 15 yards closer. So they were giving up a 15-yard advantage in the field goal just to not put our offense on the field again. Is that not true?
Yes. I mean, but this was a win the game right there, and we don't get another shot.
I mean, all they got to do is take a knee, and then the field goal is 15 yards closer.
I think it was we don't get another chance. Auburn wouldn't get another chance. This is Alabama's chance to win the game and walk off the field in a hostile stadium. You got to try it.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad they did. all right. Well, I'm going to walk through it because my perception of it, and it's funny because I honestly feel like I might have enjoyed it and been shocked and happily enjoyed it a little more than most people because most people had more sense than I did. All right. I was stupid. I had a case of the stupids during this play. I was so astonished that it was even happening. Okay. That my brain did not function to process what was happening. Now, here's what I mean by that. They line up to kick the field goal. I'm thinking one thing. You know what I'm thinking? 1985.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking it's Bo Jackson's birthday today. Guess what? It was Bo Jackson's birthday during the Iron Bowl in 1985. That was when Bo scored, or actually it was Reggie Ware, but Bo drove us down the field the second time. And we were up 23-22, a good Auburn score, right? 23-22. And stupid Mike Shula, who went on to great success in the coaching business.
I think he's Cam Newton's offensive coordinator.
God, poor Cam. He had fun in practice this week. Drove them a couple plays. Richardson was the name of their receiver, dragged little Bivens, Michael Bivens, who was about 4'7 and weighed about 110, all the way down the field and out of bounds. And Tiffin came out and made that stupid 52-yard field goal, as Keith Jackson said, into the breeze. And that was to me one of the absolute most gut-wrenching, gutting losses in Iron Bowl history to me. 85 is one I despise. I was, a junior in high school? That's when you're really into it. All your friends at school are Alabama fans, you know, and you had that horrible loss the year before in 84, but now you're going to get revenge. Bo's winning the Heisman Trophy. He's a senior, you know, and they kicked that field goal and just ripped my guts out. So when they came out there to kick a field goal and everything looked like it was lining up the same way, right? That's all I'm thinking about is horror. Okay, he kicks that ball. And tell me the truth. Did it not look for the first split second like it was going to go?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just going, ah, you know, just agony. And then it starts drifting off and tailing off a little bit to the leg. In fact, all the announcers are saying it's got the leg. No, it doesn't, right? They all kind of corrected themselves halfway through. It's got a distance. No, it doesn't. And so it drifts off and he catches it. Now, I am just soaked in relief at that point. Dude is like on the 20 before I even realize he has the ball. Then I'm thinking, wait a minute. Can he run this out? Isn't this one of those things? My brain is just in a daze at this point. I don't even know rules of football at this point. So I'm thinking something like, isn't this one of those deals where you're not supposed to touch the ball? I know that makes no sense, but honestly, at that moment, I couldn't put two synapses together in my head. I'm thinking, why is he doing this? Aren't you not supposed to touch the ball? Oh, my God, they could score a touchdown or something. And he gets to about the 30 or 40, and I'm starting thinking, wait a minute, it sure looks like he knows what he's doing. Do we get points for this? Honestly to God, it ran through my head about the 30 or 40-yard line. Do we get points for this? I then flashed back to the SEC championship game of 97 when we blocked the extra point of Tennessee, remember, and ran it back for two?
Yeah, that's right.
And I thought, hey, we get 2 points for this. Honestly, I thought that. The rules of football went out of my head. And then when he went in the end zone and they rang up touchdown and it went 34, I went, holy, bleep, 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 we got a touchdown, bleep, bleep. And then I realized there was no time left. Holy crap, we won. It was just, and you know, that gets to the heart of that entire play. I think this is what makes that play so special. even beyond the context of the game in which it happened, right? Because a big part of it is the context of the game itself. It was Auburn, Alabama. It was number one versus number four. It was the three-peat. All those things are peripheral. But what made that play so special is it was Alabama lining up to do something singular that would win the game for them. And somehow, over the space of a few seconds, everything did a 180 the other direction and won the game for us. And that, I mean, it's like if Doug Flutie had thrown that ball to Phelan, and it had bounced out of Phelan's hands, and a guy on Miami had caught it and run 105 yards the other way, and they'd been behind, you know.
Yep.
It was the whiplash effect of that play as much as anything. Again, context aside for a second, and the context is huge. But context aside, it was the whiplash. That play was like driving your car 90 miles an hour down the highway, standing on the brakes, popping the emergency brake, spinning 360 and then 180 again around, and stomping it back the other way. You know?
That's a good description.
Yeah, and you're just sitting there dizzy, and you can't believe it. So, you know, I just have a hard there's so many elements to it. The context of it, the situation, the play itself, the unusual nature of it. You know, I mean, people that are watching it around the country and around the world and are seeing it and are amazed by it, they are that amazed by the play without most of the context.
It's true.
They're amazed by it just like it was a ski jump at the Olympics that was amazing. They don't get the whole life-changing, you know, Armageddon level nature of it. And they're still amazed by it. So good God, aren't we amazed by it over here that actually appreciate the full spectrum of its meaning. Man, I didn't know I had that much to say about it, but... I feel very strongly about it.
Well, I think like a lot of fans, my reaction when he started, you know, when he lands the kick was, uh-oh. You see the kick going up and it seemed like the line wasn't bad. And then it starts coming down and I felt okay. And then when Davis caught it, I was just screaming, run. You know, run.
Yeah.
And then then we're like, did he step out of bounds? Is he getting out of bounds? And then once he got in the clear and they weren't blowing the play dead and there wasn't any signal for flags or anything, then we just started going bananas. So
yeah, then you're just hoping that Robinson Therese doesn't knock him over.
At the time, I really didn't notice how close they got to each other. Oh. Watching that play 100 times since then, Threezy runs right up next to him, and it made me nervous. So.
I know, like, dude, there's nobody in 10 miles of you. You know, you're basically running this play against about 8 pudgy linemen. You know, once you got past those two guys that reached in futility for him, if you've seen that movie Gravity?
No.
Okay, well, I won't spoil anything, but you've seen on the trailers, and it's on the ads, where, like, they're flung away from the shuttle or whatever, and they reach out for anything to grab before they fly off into the universe. And seeing those guys reaching in great futility for Davis and just, like, their fingertips brushing his shoulder made me think of, like, George Clooney's space-suited hand scrabbling for the for the shuttle as he spins off into the darkness, which is what Bama did at the end of that game. They went spinning off into the black depths of the universe where they belong. So,
well, there's another good metaphor for it.
That's what I do, man. I come up with the allusions and metaphors. It's funny because if you think about what really happened on that play, it was just, you know, Davis running back a kick. That's what he does. And he wasn't even running back a kick against a kicking team. He's running back a kick against a bunch of linemen. So it's not so shocking that he was able to do the last part of the play. It's that the whole thing came together that way. It's just, you know, it's the bigger picture, I think, that's really what is so mind-blowing there. But, well, if I can stop hyperventilating for a minute, You asked the question earlier in our notes, and I think it's an excellent question. Where does this rank among Auburn victories? What do you think?
I don't see how it can't be number one. I mean, you know, 1989, 2010, the 80, Oregon 82. Oregon game in 82. I mean, not all those kind of things are there. But given that it was Alabama and they were the two-time defending champs and it was at home and Auburn might end up, you know, winning the SEC and going beyond that, it's tough to pick another game to say that it was a bigger win than that.
And just such an exciting and close game. I mean, the farthest apart they were was 21-7, and we closed that up pretty quickly.
Yep.
And we got more to say about some of that, I think, in a bit.
The other part of this is you and I have a very strict rule against field storming. We are very much from the old school of act like you've been there before, and we're Auburn. We've won a bunch of football games. We do not storm the field when we beat, you know, Mississippi State or somebody. We just don't ever. No. I don't care how dramatic it was. We do not storm the field, you know, in that kind of situation. But, you know, beating number one, two-time defending champ Alabama, you know, when we could win the SEC a season after we didn't win a conference game on a 108-yard kick return off a missed field goal, it probably qualifies.
If there's any circumstances that could possibly qualify, in fact, given everything you just said, I am hard-pressed to think of any circumstances that could be more dramatic than this. What more could have happened? I mean, could Saban have dropped dead of heart failure as Davis crossed the line? I mean, could an asteroid have hit the Bama sideline? What more could have happened? What more could have been in play?
I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, let me go back and give my side of the where I rank it.
I'll tell you what more could have been in play is if we actually had the playoff going on and that was a real playoff game.
Yeah. But I mean, but it almost was. So for all intents and purposes, it kind of, you know, except that we still need help because the other ones, because Ohio State and Florida State didn't play each other. That's what we needed, was Ohio State and Florida State to play each other while we were playing Alabama.
Well, we'll get to that.
Well, among Auburn victories and among Iron Bowls, it's so hard for me with 1989. I've been thinking a lot about this the last day or two, how I would compare 89. There were an awful lot of similarities between 89 and this game. It wasn't first time ever, but it had about it had not as many, you know, say his, it didn't have as many grand historical implications as 89, but it had probably more immediate historical implications than 89. Yeah. And so I think that they are both untouchable in what they are, but they're two separate things. In both cases, Alabama was undefeated and heading for the national championship. And in both cases, they came to Auburn and we beat them. And in fact, do you know that today as we record this, December 2nd, is the 24th anniversary of that game?
Nice.
1989, yeah. So I would say that 89, for the long run, is the grand history of Auburn as an institution. 89 can't be touched because that circumstance can only happen once. But as far as, you know, modern Auburn football, an exciting game, what's on the line, all the things that were involved in it. Yeah, and then how it ended, this is the greatest Iron Bowl in terms of an Iron Bowl as opposed to Auburn history.
And being in Jordan-Hare, this is a big part of it, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This was almost in some ways like part two of 1989. I almost want to think of the two together in some ways. And, you know, there's another way that I'm going to get to that has something to do with Pat Dye. I'll get to in a little bit. It's interesting the way that Pat Dye was there and Tommy Tuberville was there. I wonder if Chizik snuck in just to make it complete. I'm sure Terry Bowden was busy elsewhere. But that's three of the five modern Auburn coaches were there.
Well, I'm sure they enjoyed it.
And Chizik was not
far
away.
They all enjoyed beating Alabama. I'm sure they enjoyed that.
They all enjoyed their Bear Bryant Coach of the Year trophies, and Gus is going to get his now. The Alabama fans just melted down on Twitter to some degree when I pointed out that since there's been a Bear Bryant Trophy, every Auburn coach has won it. And that legacy is going to continue this year if there's any justice in the world, right?
That's true.
All right. Let's see. A couple of other things. We got to get to listener questions. We got a couple other things. I wanted to know, what's your favorite catchphrase so far?
For the play?
Yeah. The play, the game. You know, I've heard kick Bama kick. I've heard, you know, give me a second, or have you got a second? Or I'm not big on the second one. The Tiger Rags has a shirt. It has the Gus Bus driven by Albie running over their little elephant with tread marks on him, and it says something like, I don't know, flattened by the Gus Bus, something. I kind of like that one. It's got the score on the back. I might be ordering that one, but I'm just wondering, what's the catchphrase that's going to go down in history for this game? We had the immaculate deflection / a prayer at Jordan Hare, miracle at Jordan Hare. We still haven't decided on that one yet among the Auburn family, but what's this one going to be called?
I don't know. I mean, the kick?
Yeah, kick Bama kick, I think, is... I think because
of the punt Bama punt
thing,
I think it's there, so I don't know. Kick six is the other one I've
heard. Yeah, that's the other one. Yeah. One was really funny. It said, "Hey Saban, have you got a second?" Okay, yeah. And that's funny. And then it said, "I have a play I want to run by you." I thought that was good. Because we had a play that we ran by him. And that gets us to actually to a listener question in a second. One other thing I got to point out here, because I'm going to have lots of drops, audio drops in this episode. I'll be up till 3 a.m. again, dang it. But I got some music I want to use. And one of the guys on one of our other shows on the network, and I think it's Albilicious, and it always makes me uncomfortable saying his name. He suggested on their post-game show that this game was kind of to him like Ocean's 11. Gus was Danny Ocean, and Saban was Terry Benedict. And
I thought that was a good analogy.
Basically, Gus knocked over the Bellagio.
Mm-hmm.
And that allusion is good, but it also makes me think of a more direct connection between the Iron Bowl and Ocean's 11, the original version. So I give you...
I got great news for you.
Auburn beat Alabama by 12 points.
No, this is important, honestly.
So there was Frank Sinatra and Angie Dickinson in the 1960 version of Ocean's 11. How cool is it that they actually mention the Iron Bowl in that movie? Have we got any other preliminary matters that have gone on for 45 minutes, or do you want to get into listener questions?
Let's go to listener questions. People want their questions answered. All right. First question is a simple, direct question somebody asked you, and the question is, did the tide roll?
That's a beautiful question. It's simplicity and it's complexity at the same time. The tide rolled and rolled and rolled down the hole.
I think that's about it.
Yep.
Kind of sums it up.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Our next question comes from Jordan Hare Jargon,
mm-hmm.
who asks, if Chris Davis happened to run down the Alabama sideline, does he score?
You know, that's what I was kind of touching on a second ago with one of those. I mentioned it a second ago. I forget exactly what. It makes you think of the Steelers coach, right?
To Mike Tomlin. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, who was kind of accidentally wandering out onto the field when the guy was running by and got him tackled. It would have been interesting. I mean, they'd have advanced it for a touchdown, wouldn't they?
Yes.
If something, because Alabama's engaged in those shenanigans before, you know, the Alabama Rice game back in like what, the 20s or 30s. Do you know about that?
I believe that happened. Yes.
Yeah, there was a Rice running back that took off down the field to win the game, and one of the Alabama assistant coaches or players, I think it was a player, couldn't stand it, and he actually like jumped off the sideline, tackled the guy, and ran back and hid.
Oh, that's right. They said he had too much Bama in him.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
No, but it's true, though. I was happy he went down the Auburn sideline.
Yeah, I think that was probably a good thing. He took the left turn instead of the right turn at Albuquerque.
All right. Our next question comes from Wes Atkinson, who asks, is it just me, or has the BCS talk shifted very pro-Auburn recently? Can Auburn win the BCS beauty pageant?
I haven't noticed it doing that. I've heard, I mean, it might be a little bit better than it was when they were talking hypothetical before we beat Alabama. I don't think it sounded very good for us. After we actually beat Alabama, I think it's clicked up a notch or two, but I still get a sense, and I think it was maybe Brad Edwards this afternoon, the guru of the BCS, and I think that right after this season we get to take him out and shoot him since the BCS is done, right? But I think he was saying something like, with the computers being the way they are right now, you would take 75% of the human voters to vote Auburn over Ohio State. So that, if that's true, and I don't know if it's true, and the computers could change too if we beat Missouri, I don't know. I keep trying to tell myself, don't get in that 2004 mindset. Appreciate this for what it is. I keep feeling the tug, though. You know, I keep feeling the tug, the temptation to fret, to want more.
No.
And I keep trying to tell myself, no. Enjoy what we are.
We're going to talk about this later, but I'm going to say that position very clearly. Focus on Missouri.
Yes. And Gus Missouri. Is. Have you ever seen a coach that's more focused like that than what Gus has been doing? He didn't even talk to ESPN on Sunday morning. He sent Jay Jacobs out there to be the politician, you know.
I didn't like Jay Jacobs going out even Saturday night saying that stuff. Focus on Missouri.
Yeah.
Football karma is real. And if Auburn fans and Auburn officials are out there talking about Ohio State, we will lose. Deal with what you can deal with.
And the next question we got is actually about Ohio State. So
the next question is an interesting question from Will Thrasher, who asks, hypothetical scenario, Ohio State and Florida State both lose.
Oh, man.
Auburn wins the SEC championship game. Who would Auburn play in the Pasadena?
You know where he's going with that.
The real danger is we play Alabama.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got something to say about that. You want me to say it now?
Say it.
No! They're done. I don't want to dig the vampire out of his crypt and have to stab him in the heart again, okay? Vampires, ghouls, zombies, these undead Alabama players, teams, they are shifty. They're dangerous. Just because you stab them in the heart with the stake once doesn't mean you can revive the dead corpse and then get them again. Once they're dead, they're dead. Move on. I don't want to play Alabama again. I'm not afraid of them. I'm not scared of them. It's nothing like that. It's just we beat them. They're done. We shouldn't have to beat them twice. There's other fish to fry.
They should not get another shot. That's how I
know. Yeah, they blew it. They lost. Why should we reward them? They lost. They pay the price. Next issue. Move on.
All right. Earl from at the Prowler 01 asked, you can't call this a miracle. And I agree with him here.
Mm-hmm.
There was no luck, and we were not in danger of losing. That's just playing hard until the clock says 0-0.
Yeah, and it was a plan by Gus at the timeout.
And this is the other thing that everybody loses is perspective on. The Georgia play was different because that was a single play that was win or lose. We were either going to win the game or lose the game. There was no in between. If Chris Davis trips over his own feet at the 5-yard line, it doesn't get in the end zone. We go to overtime. We beat him in overtime.
Mm-hmm.
Big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't over. The game wasn't win or lose at that point. But we won it, but it wasn't the only way the game could have ended. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
With the Georgia play, it was different. So I agree that in some ways it wasn't a miracle. I mean, the other part is it was design.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
they called timeout and put Davis back there on purpose.
Yeah, he wasn't just wandering around lost and ended up in the end zone. Right. Okay.
All right, next question from Hugh Miller. And I'm glad he brought this up because I meant to talk about this. Why did we sew a Darius Odes Toward jersey on the sideline? Can we not afford backup jerseys? Is there a rule against it? The sewing machine thing was unbelievable. I've watched college football forever, and I've never seen that in a game.
Yeah, it was pretty strange.
I saw a game one time at the UVA Stadium in Charlottesville where they broke the chain, you know, the first down chain three times and had to replace it. And I've never seen anybody pull out a sewing machine like that.
What was the deal?
I don't understand. In our home stadium, we have to have backup jerseys of that color for the players. I don't understand why we didn't just pull it out, put it on. Maybe you're not allowed to.
Or you can change the number even, right? I mean, there was a game. What was the game?
What was the Ole Miss game where they changed Robert Kendiche's number so he could be an eligible running back? So you're right. We could have just pulled out a spare number and put it on him and notified everybody. But
how funny would it have been if we stuck like a 7 or a 34 on him?
But the other part was they did that, and at the end of the game, a couple times, he was very close to sacking McCarron. And I think the whole, like, if he'd have sacked McCarron, like, on that last series and stripped the ball and we won the game or something, that would have been, like, you know, guy with sewing machine jersey wins the game.
So amazing. Right.
It was crazy. I don't think there's a rule against the backup jersey thing. I'll do some more research on this, but I'm not sure why.
I had two points about it. One is it was cool that we had a sewing machine hanging around the stadium. That's interesting.
Well, I mean, if you're the equipment guy for Auburn University football, you're going to have every possible scenario covered for that game.
And mad sewing skills, which that dude had. He was sewing him into the jersey standing up like it was Marilyn Monroe about to go serenade Kennedy.
Yep.
The other question I had was why were Gary and Vern so fascinated by it? I'm sitting there thinking, I understand it's weird, but we're like playing number one versus number four. It's the Iron Bowl. There's like big plays going on, and they keep going back to the dang sewing machine. I'm like,
well, but it's because it was like a cow wandering down the street in New York City. It was just so out of place. It was bizarre.
I'd look for the Chick-fil-A van at that point, I guess.
There you go.
All right. What we got?
All right. Next question comes from Matthew Flowers, who asks, so what now? What do we hope for? How far is the reach?
Yeah, well, that gets to a little bit of what we've been sort of dancing around, which is, do you start thinking about the future? And I have been.
Well, let's forget the national championship game scenario. What is your feeling after this game about the future of, like, next year and the year after that and the year after that? How do you feel about that right now?
I feel that when I said we need to hire Gus Malzahn, I was a freaking genius and a prophet.
Yeah, we need to say, again, we wrote a thing for the War Eagle Reader last year. You can go look it up. It's on the website, where we wrote down, you know, what coaches we wanted Auburn to hire. And I wrote down a bunch of names, including, you know, Art Briles at Baylor, Gary Patterson.
Peterson.
Chris Peterson at Boise and those kind of people.
Good coaches.
Yeah, there were some pretty good names in that list. And Van wrote down Gus Malzahn, Gus Malzahn, Gus Malzahn, Gus Malzahn. That was his entire list. Mm-hmm. And Gus was on my list, too. I think he was third. But clearly, it couldn't have worked out any better with the hires.
Who was notably absent from both our lists that wanted the job but didn't get a formal interview?
Oh, Petrino.
I would just like to tell the 50% of the Auburn family that was big Petrino supporters, it's okay. Let it go. It's all is forgiven.
I think everybody's forgotten about that.
Peace and love. Oh, well, I hadn't forgotten about it. We could have hired that bum.
The biggest thing is that I think you have to feel great about Gus's ability to build and coach a program. What would happen this season and what happened on Saturday, you know, wasn't like a one guy kind of thing, a one special transcendent player or one, you know, kind of one trick thing that we did. That's very sustainable. As players graduate, move on, you can replace guys and bring in new talent. And you've seen Gus's offense shift between more running and more passing at different times. And, you know, it'll work both ways. So I think, you have to feel really confident about our ability to compete at the upper levels of the SEC over the next 3 or 4 years.
We have the right coach.
Yes. And the other part is, like, he's all business.
Absolutely.
Like you said, he's super laser focused. He's not out there playing games and doing stupid stuff. So
even the stuff that we thought was kind of cute from Tuberville or whatever, Gus isn't going to do that. It's like radical for Gus to, like, crack a smile.
Yep.
I mean, he is, but he's not miserable like Saban, though. That's the thing. Saban is all business, but in a way that just kind of makes you depressed to me.
Yes.
You know, Saban is like there's a funeral going on somewhere all the time. Gus is upbeat but serious. It's a rare combination, and we're very fortunate.
Our next question comes from Josh at the Blipster, and he says, so we save the world, but do Ohio State or Florida State get the girl, i.e. the crystal football, a horrible ending?
Now, that's what we're trying to guard against, is thinking of this as a horrible ending.
No, it's not. Again, we went 3-9 last year. We went 0-8 at SEC. We're in the fairy tale. We're there. You know? I mean, this is it. We married the prince
and moved to the castle 3 games ago.
If Missouri beats us 40-0, we're still living happily ever after. So there's no bad endings.
Bad endings
ceased to exist about 5 games ago.
Exactly. But I have to say this. The one perspective I can see on it that I can get with that is this. These kind of seasons don't happen a lot. Now, we have had, 04 and 10 and now 13, so we've been pretty good and pretty fortunate, no doubt about it, lately. But it's not every year that you're in position to even try to get in the national championship conversation. So I can see the perspective that if you're this close, you really need to kick the door down. I get that. I'm not saying we should just meekly tap on the door of the national championship game and then slink away and go back and celebrate what we have. I'd love to kick the door down. I'm just saying if we kick that door as hard as we can and destiny says that we just can't get through it because somebody else already has, I just feel like we shouldn't let that in any way detract from the season.
I agree 100%.
All right.
And we have another question about a potential rematch. This time, if we not in the national championship game, but if we go to the Sugar Bowl, there's a scenario where we could play them again in the Sugar Bowl. No. And once again, no thank you.
No, they'll be in the Orange Bowl beating the crap out of Clemson. and we'll be in the Sugar Bowl beating the crap out of Central Florida unless the things bounce the right way. We'll see.
All right. That's it for our listener questions. Thank you for submitting them. If you have any more next week, submit them on the easiest way is on Twitter at AU Wishbone. We'll be happy to get to them and answer your questions. And we enjoy getting them. Thank you for everybody who's submitting them this week.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. You ready to move on to talk about the game?
Yeah.
I guess the one first thing I want to say about the game is I'm a little bit unhappy about the dramatic ending because it's so crazy and so dramatic and so exciting that it takes away a little bit from the fact that, we stood toe-to-toe with this undefeated national champion Alabama team. We ran for 296 yards on them. We played them, to a situation where we were going to go to overtime, and I felt pretty good about it. And nobody even thinks about that because of that play at the end. And I talked about this afternoon with one of my friends who's a UVA fan. And he said, what are you talking about? He said, you got everything you ever wanted for your birthday, and now you're complaining the icing's the wrong color on the cake. He said, just stop. So
full perspective.
It is. So I really do think that, but I can't say that to anybody outside of fans.
That's a neat perspective. What I would say to that, I think it's an interesting point, though. I know exactly what you mean, because the same thing happened with the Georgia game, and it hurt us perceptionally. If we had gone on and beaten Georgia by 20 points, there wouldn't have been the cool, immaculate deflection, the miracle in Jordan-Hare. But you also wouldn't have had knuckleheads like Jesse Palmer saying, well, I consider that a loss. I consider you got hit by a bus before you went in the studio today, Jesse. How you like that? They act like in the Georgia game we scored, 43 points on that one play. And it's similar here that people get so wrapped up in that one play that they start thinking, wow, Auburn only beat Alabama because of this amazing play. And that's not the case. Like you said, if without the amazing play, it's still overtime. So
And I think we still would have beat him in overtime.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm saying, I know what you mean. It does in some ways detract from the greater accomplishment of the 3.5 hours. I understand what you mean.
And to me, the big thing is that defense was – people were so scared of Alabama's defense, and they were so tough against the run, and we ran for 296 yards against them. That's amazing.
Yeah. And we didn't have like – you know, it's not one of those Bo Jackson games where it's like 2 yards, 2 yards, 80 yards. Oh, look, we went for 84 yards on three carries.
No.
No, this was – this was 3, 4, 5 yards at a time, pretty much, with a couple of exceptions. This was Mason, predominantly Mason, but also Marshall and a little bit of other guys. Hey, there was a Cameron Artis Payne sighting.
There was. It was
on the,
shocking.
On the touchdown drive, wasn't it?
It was.
Because he was the running back that Marshall faked it to before the other miraculous play, which I want to get to. Because I don't think that play is getting enough attention. That play, okay, we're talking about the Marshall almost crossed the line, chucked the ball over the DB's head to
Coates.
To Coates. That play is not getting as much attention as it should. That play had me down on my knees screaming, miracle, 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 too. And Rod Bramblett, too.
It was an excellent play. I mean, it's something they've been doing a lot, I think, where the, you know, he faked inside to running back, which had been Mason the whole drive. But since Mason had carried six times in a row, they took him out and put Cameron Artis Payne in.
So they could fake it to him.
Faked it to Cameron Artis Payne. And then Marshall comes around the end and he starts running down the line of scrimmage. And the Alabama safety and the cornerback both rushed up to try and get him. Mm-hmm. And that's when he stopped and threw it. I think, you know, that's something Auburn had been kind of there the whole game, and they hadn't taken advantage of it. And at that moment, they did it, and it was a great play. I mean, Marshall executed it perfectly, and really, once the other part of this kind of stuff, that play, some of the other plays like that is, again, this is the Alabama defense. This isn't the regular defense. These guys are well prepared, well coached, supposed to. And who's the secondary coach? Saban. Mm-hmm. Those were his guys that left their position and went after him. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was an amazing play and a great touchdown when we had to have it with 30 seconds left. The other thing about that drive was just, you know, the clock was running and we were running the ball up the middle the whole time.
Oh, I know. Well, because that's what we can do. That's how we could move the ball. Honestly, on that drive that we scored that we're talking about right now, if we'd come out chucking the ball through the air, do you think we would have scored a touchdown that drive?
Probably not.
Yeah. I was like, I know that time is running short, but we're doing what works.
Yeah.
It's like we were a wishbone team out there. You don't start suddenly throwing 70-yard bombs. You run the triple option. That's what you do. That's who you are.
The other part is because they get up to the line and snap the ball so fast, it wasn't any much slower than throwing it. So.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I want to hit some numbers here before we get too far away from it about the overall implications of this game. In the last 30 years, Auburn leads the series with Alabama 16-14. In the last 20 years, Auburn leads 11-9. In the last 10 years, Auburn leads 6-4. It's 2-2 the last 4 years. I'm trying to find that 365 days a year domination of our rival that Saban was talking about. It's 2-2. They were playing for a three-peat of the national championship, right? They were two-time national champions, and yet in the last 4 years, the Iron Bowl stands at 2-2. I'm not seeing any domination there, to be honest with you. And Saban is 6-6 against Auburn. 6-6, okay? This is the greatest coach who ever walked on water after the Bear. 6-6. And when Auburn has 9 or more wins, what's Saban's record against Auburn?
It's 0-4.
0-6. Amazing. You know, I got to say one other thing that Gus did that I thought was really impressive, and it plays into what we've been talking about. The thing that really impressed me about Gus's play calling in this game, what's something that you and I have kind of halfway complained about him doing all the way back to 2009 is he sometimes out-cutes himself, out-thinks himself, runs too many gadget plays, maybe gets a little too cute, right?
Yeah.
Does the reverse when a run up the middle would work. You know, does the reverse pass when the regular pass would work? And it messes up. There was a very, very small number of plays in this game that we ran that weren't just bread and butter, basic, hammer them in the face plays, were there?
Well, and none of them were the real tricks.
Right.
I mean, we didn't do anything.
None of that.
No halfback pass, no double pass, no reverse reverses. I mean, it was Statue of Liberty. Very vanilla, right at them, gain the yards. It was.
And the plays that worked the least for us were the ones that were lateral.
Yep.
When we had to do it, I know. But those were the ones that worked the least. The plays that worked the best for us was running right up the middle, right at their linebackers and everything.
Yep.
Just punching them.
The part of that was, you know, this offense is so good and they execute it so well. They run the same play again and again, even against Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, well, Alabama's not going to get fooled by that. But you see it. You saw it on those read option plays where Marshall would, you know, we get up there with Mason and he'd do the little mesh where he's thinking about handing it off and thinking about keeping it. And he'd see the linebackers going in the middle where Mason would go. And he'd just keep it and run around. If you go back and watch the first touchdown where Marshall runs like 45 yards, you can really see it. Mosley absolutely like dives into the center of the offensive line because he's sure Mason has the ball. And he completely leaves his position wide open, and Marshall just strolls right through there for mm-hmm. the 45-yard touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened a lot in that game when Auburn, you know, Marshall has gotten so good at that.
Mm-hmm.
When he, you know, fakes the handoff from there, and Mason is so good, he was so dangerous in that game, they were scared of it. Their players were all diving into the middle the minute they even thought about it, and then that opened up stuff to the outside some. So.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, when we did different things, I really think that Malzahn's offense fooled them a lot. You don't often see Alabama's defense out of position like that. Like on that pass play to Coates, on the early pass play that we missed to Lewis, where he was open by 10 yards. I mean, they completely blew that. And we had a few other plays like that where we ran something and they absolutely were out of position and couldn't block it, and we got big gains out of it.
I've got to say something about Ricardo Lewis.
All right.
I touched on this, I think, in our print column last week. I honestly think Ricardo Lewis needs an eye exam because, I mean, he's a good player when he gets the ball, but he just has trouble being in the right place for the ball. It's like he doesn't see it clearly until it's right on top of him. Think about, you know, I said this last week. At the end of the Georgia game, if he had been the only player on the field down there, he wouldn't have caught the touchdown. The only reason he caught it was the Georgia guys knocked it 3 yards to the right.
Alabama game.
My God. He spun around like the Tasmanian devil trying to catch the ball. He's wide open.
But I think like he thought he was going one way, and I think Marshall thought he was going the other way, and it just didn't work.
Tell me this: when Marshall threw the ball for the last touchdown, were you not happy that it was Coates and not Ricardo Lewis?
No, that wouldn't have bothered me either way. But I mean, I trust Coates though. Sure.
Oh yeah, if it had been Ricardo Lewis, I promise you there was a chance. It would have missed him 3 yards to one side, and he just wouldn't have caught it. I hate to say that. Bless Ricardo Lewis's heart for the immaculate deflection. He can live on that forever. But I just wonder if he needs glasses or something. I mean it in compassion and love. I'm not criticizing him.
I mean, it could be something else where in terms of route running and being in the right position for the ball and stuff too. So
all right, well.
All right. The other thing about this game that I thought was really important is that we talked last week about how important the crowd was and the location and being the game being in Jordan-Hare. Alabama did not have good composure during the game at all. And it wasn't just the kickers. It was the whole team.
Receivers for the most part.
The receivers dropped passes.
The punter.
The punter dropped the punt. We should have blocked that and got much better field position out of that. And then the officials hosed Chris Davis on the fair catch thing.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, they had bad penalties. They guys missed assignments. They had their series where they had to call two timeouts in a row because they couldn't get lined up right. So I just thought, like, their whole team had, you know, this team that's supposed to be so, you know, so good at winning and so tough and so experienced, you know, they had very poor composure.
You know what? Go ahead.
I just feel like they, even McCarron, who's, you know, was supposed to be auditioning for the Heisman Trophy, I think he didn't, there was times during the game, especially early, where he had very bad composure.
I've got to say this. Attention, people who have been saying things to the contrary. People have been saying, well, you know, if Auburn and Alabama played each other 10 times, Alabama would win 7 or 8 of them. I'm sorry, but you are wrong. Because Auburn missed at least as many opportunities as Alabama did in that game.
Mm-hmm.
We could have scored 2 touchdowns on long passes that were dropped. We could have blocked that punt. We could have not fumbled and given them a free touchdown, you know, in the second quarter. There were so many ways that we could have done so much better. So I don't know how anybody that watched that game can rationally say, oh, well, Alabama was clearly the better team. And if they played like a, you know, best of 7, that's crap. We win 4 or 5 at least. I thought we were the better team.
I thought we were the better team. I think playing a Jordan Hare had a lot to do with it. I mean, I think on a neutral field or in their stadium, it might be different. But I think at Jordan Hare, we were the better team.
Yeah, no, and I'm including that. But yeah, you're okay. Right. Okay.
The other thing about this game is that you know, you were worried about the Auburn defense stopping their offense, and we did get some stops when they needed to. There was a big fourth down stop late in the game. There was some other short yardage stops where the defensive line rose up. We only had 1 sack. But a few times they got out there, chased McCarron around a little bit, made him throw it before he wanted to, or when he wasn't quite ready or the receivers weren't ready. So I think, you know, the defense wasn't great, but I think when they needed to be, they stood up and made plays, especially against the run. I think, you know, Alabama had a lot of rushing yards, but I think the defensive line really stood up and made plays against the run. In the second half, I think they were pretty good. You know, Gabe Wright had a really good game. Carl Lawson had an excellent game. You didn't see him get the sacks, but there were several plays where he was the guy who got to the running back and made the tackle. On that fourth down run that Alabama had where Yeldon got caught behind the line, that was Carl Lawson. And there was another play where he pushed the guy blocking him into the backfield and messed up the rush. Ben Bradley had a couple of good plays, too, playing defensive tackle where he pushed his blocker into the backfield and screwed up the Alabama offense. So, you know, the defensive line didn't have a huge day in terms of making sacks and a bunch of tackles behind the line, but I think they did enough to enable us to get out of there with a win.
Mm-hmm. And you know, held them to field goals or stopped them on fourth down. That's huge. And if you want to say, well, Alabama missed 4 field goals, that's just bad luck. Well, we missed 2 or 3 big touchdowns. You know, give them 2 of their field goals back and then give us 1 touchdown that we dropped. And we still win 7-6, huh? So there you go.
But the other part is, again, I mean, they couldn't get past that skirting line of scrimmage. And the defense tightened up and we made stops on them. So.
Mm-hmm.
Those 2 plays where we had the 2 huge punts down at the 1-foot line, and neither time could we take advantage of it. I thought those were huge turning points in the game.
I was very concerned. I was saying, don't go for the safety and give up the big play. And, of course, that's what happened the second time. So
that was frustrating.
Yes.
All right. I thought it would be interesting if we kind of walk through towards the end of the game some different – we kind of talked about a lot of it already, but just some different things that happened. And what was kind of going through your head at this point, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So with 10 minutes left in the game, Alabama scores and they go up 28-21.
That's the 99-yard pass.
That's right. So the next series, we get the ball, we don't get a first down, we go for it on fourth down, and we don't make it.
And we've given them the ball on like our 30 or something, right?
Right. So then – they drive forward – to our 13-yard line, But they go for it on fourth down instead of kicking the short field goal.
And we stop them.
We stop them. So then we get the ball back, and the Auburn series of plays goes sack, incomplete, incomplete, punt. And that was, again, we hadn't gone back yet to the run up the middle.
Right.
You know, hammering with the run, and I thought we were passing a little too much.
John, this is the thing. The worst thing that can happen to our offense is a negative play on first down. Would you agree?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
That's what happened to us against Georgia late that kind of gave them a couple of opportunities to make a couple of those late touchdowns to take the lead. And it's the same thing here. When we get messed up on first down, either a penalty coming out of the gate or a sack or anything that puts us at second and 10 or worse, when that happens, it totally screws up the whole plan for that drive. And it's like they throw the running plays out the window and they have to go to the pass, and we become predictable and we're not a well-oiled machine in the passing game. We're competent in the passing game more than people thought, right? But we're not a super duper passing machine and like we are a super running machine. And so once we get in that situation, we become a lot more predictable and it becomes a lot more difficult. You know, the dream scenario is that we run on first down and get like 5 yards.
Yep.
Because then we've got two plays to do what we want with confidence that we can get the first down.
That's right. So that, and you're right. I mean, that the sack really screwed us up there. We couldn't go back to running it after that. We incomplete punt. So then Alabama gets the ball back. We block the field goal. A huge,
amazing.
Another huge play by the defense.
Special teams.
Huge play. And this is the other thing. Like, Alabama had great special teams, but we killed them on special teams.
Yes.
Not just the Chris Davis play at the end, but and not just the field goals, but all the other special teams. We really dominated on that. Mm-hmm. And then so Auburn gets the ball back with 2 minutes and 32 seconds. There's a key personal foul on them at that point. And so we get good field position. And then we go Trey Mason up the middle 6 times in a row. It really was like – it made me think a little bit of like the Rocky IV, you know, Rocky's fighting the big Russian guy.
Yes.
And at the end, he just starts going in for the body blows, you know.
Yes.
And it really was like that. We had kind of softened him up, and now it was like time to make a pay, and we knew they couldn't stop it. And we just went in there and went at him. And I said this last week, and I say it again, this is and it's really interesting when I thought about it today. This is the worst Alabama defense of the last 4 years. And think about this. Alabama has been cherry-picking the 5-star recruits they wanted out of the last few years, but yet this team is not as good on defense as last year or the year before or the year before that or the year before that. And they don't – and this is where you really saw it, is those teams had a guy at nose tackle – a guy like Jesse Williams or Josh Chapman or that Terrence Cody guy, who were all huge guys in the middle who were kind of immovable objects that could really hold up like two Auburn offensive linemen and keep them off the linebackers.
The blob.
But those guys in the middle this time couldn't do that, and there was a lot of plays where Auburn offensive linemen were getting through there and hitting the Alabama linebackers on these run plays.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really interesting. So we ran it, and we didn't mess around. We ran straight at him with our, you know, Trey Mason's our best player on offense. We're giving him the ball, running straight at him. Didn't mess around, didn't take any chances, but at the same time, not panicking about the clock either.
Oh, right, right. Yeah, and I wasn't that worried about it. We had like 3 timeouts still at that point, didn't we?
We did, but it just showed a lot of confidence in what they're doing on offense.
Mm-hmm.
We're not trying to throw it. We're not trying to do anything fancy. We're running right at him.
We weren't panicking,
We're not panicking. We're not bothering to call the timeouts the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then we got to the play we just talked about with the Marshall run to the left, hit Coates on the touchdown, drew in the defense and threw it over their heads for the touchdown pass.
Mm-hmm.
So then Alabama gets the ball back, 25 seconds left in the game at their own 29-yard line. They try one long pass, and we're all over chasing McCarron around the backfield.
Yeah.
That one play, the defensive line chased him around like crazy. And it made me think, you know, they ran the 2 draw plays after that. It made me think one of the reasons they give up throwing the ball is because that on that first play, we were all over him. And they were worried that we were going to get a sack or something like that, a turnover. So then they got conservative.
Because our defensive line never wears out. They keep going. And they were making a point about that actually on CBS, that we substitute so much on the defensive front that our defensive line does not wear down. Alabama is used to pounding away on defensive lines. And in the fourth quarter, they're up against jelly.
That's right.
They weren't up against jelly on Saturday night. They were up against granite.
No, at the end of that game, our guys were attacking. I mean, at the end of that game, our defensive line was the aggressor, and they were making problems for them. So.
You know, one thing I will give A.J. McCarron credit for, when he scrambles around in the pocket trying to throw the ball, at least he doesn't flap his arms like John Football does. It just always makes me laugh watching Manziel run around flapping his little arms like he's a chicken trying to take off. I mean, I know what he ends up doing is usually amazing, but he just looks so silly doing it. I mean, you know, give McCarron credit. When he's running for his life, at least he looks like a man doing it.
I give him credit for this. He got off the field faster than
he sure
else.
Did.
His sportsmanship was amazing in that.
Did you see the picture that somebody took of Catherine Webb giving him the little sad-eyed kiss? And the caption was, "I think we need to see other people."
I didn't feel bad for him. So.
No.
But so then we got to the play, the decision, Yeldon went out of bounds. They protested to get the 1 second back, and then the decision to go for the long field goal with the backup kicker.
Oh, I got to say, by the way, McCarron is 2-2 in Iron Bowls. People have been saying he's like 2-1, but remember, he played in the fourth quarter of the 2010 game after we decapitated, what's his name, McElroy.
Yep.
McCarron was out there for a series or two at the end, so he played
a couple series. I think he was like 0-6 too. We killed him.
Absolutely. So yeah, he's 2-2.
So
Mr. Heisman moment.
Yeah, I think that's forgotten.
Thank God.
Amen for that. It drives me crazy. He's not even the best player in his own team. Come on,
ridiculous.
So anyhow, I just. And then we came to the decision that Saban had made about kicking the field goal versus throwing it in the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
Would you have been more worried if they put the offense out there or the field goal? I know you have these flashback things about the field goal that are affecting your judgment.
Yeah, I was like a Vietnam veteran when they brought the kicking team out there. I'm just going, dear God, no. I mean, from that perspective, I could see Saban's reasoning, like we talked about a while ago, that way you kick it, it's a walk off the field home run. I get that.
Sure.
But I don't know. If they put the offense out there and chucked it, I think I would have felt more confident to some degree that we could knock it down, you know, because it would have had to be basically a Hail Mary.
Yeah.
A 40 something yard, you know.
But I just feel like I think they're receivers are really good, and they got that big young tight end. Howard's really good. They could have sent him in the end zone and jumped up for the
ball. Oh, gosh, yeah. There you go.
I just think we'd have had a problem.
Why didn't they throw it to him more? Were we just blanketing him?
No. Good gosh. He was wide open at the time. That was just dumb. Here's the other one. That Drake guy killed us in the first half running the ball. He had four carries for like 35 yards in the first half, and they didn't give him the ball again.
Mm-hmm.
I think, looking back, I watched the game again, and I think one of the things that happened is, on the play where Gabe Wright sacks him, I think Drake was in blocking, and I think he whiffed on that.
And so they're like, we don't want him out there.
And they're like, we can't risk it. We can't have him out there. And so that's why Yeldon stayed in the game the whole time, because he's an excellent blocker. And but that Drake guy was good. I mean, he was really good at running the ball. He scared me a little bit. So I think if they'd have stayed with just that, they'd have been in better shape.
That makes me think of how we lost the 2005 Georgia Tech game. Well, you know, Kenny Irons he doesn't know the blocking scheme, so we'll just play Trey Smith the entire game. Good gosh. Good gosh.
There you go.
Anything else about the game before we move on to scenarios?
No, other than just it was an amazing game, and the coaching staff did a great job getting the team prepared. I really felt like nothing Alabama did surprised us, and that we executed our offense and they couldn't stop it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's been this perception out there that, well, you know, after 2010, Alabama's got this offense figured out, and that they can just roll out of bed and stop it whenever they want to. And I think Saturday showed that pretty clearly that is 100% not the case.
Yeah.
That even when they're prepared and they know what to expect and they have time to prepare all season and knowing this offense is coming, that if you execute it right and Auburn, you know, does what they're supposed to do and the talent's about equal, that Auburn will be fine.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. He can't deal. Saban can't deal with this offense or with Gus's brain. He can't. It's on a different level.
Well, and I think you saw that one series in the second half where like, we went tempo a little bit, and that mm-hmm. really messed with them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I love when we go tempo on them because they can't stand it. They hate it.
Yep. All right. Moving on. Talk about before we get to the SEC championship game, we've already talked pretty much about this discussion of the national championship game, but we need to say it again. Like, Jay Jacobs is out there lobbying, and some Auburn fans want to talk about it. And it's not complicated. If we win in the SEC championship game and Ohio State loses, we're in. Now, Florida State could lose to Duke. That's the other scenario. I mean,
yeah, ain't gonna happen.
I don't think it's going to happen either. I mean, they're a 30-point favorite in that game. So, but, I mean, it's possible that they lose to Duke. I don't think it's likely. But I think, you know, Michigan State, Ohio State is much more of a toss-up kind of game. Michigan State's defense is really good, and their offense has gotten better as the season went along. They could absolutely beat Ohio State.
I will be shocked if Michigan State wins that game because the universe – is structured in such a way that that does not happen when we are involved.
Yeah, but be careful. I mean, with BCS, these championship Saturdays roll around. Sometimes insane stuff happens.
God, it just would be so great if we could see Urban Meyer lose, that big streak come to an end, and all the benefits for us. That would be so nice. Now, you know, I wanted to mention here, we've been on every side of this kind of issue. In the modern era, we have been on every side. 1983, we were jumped by a lower-ranked team, right? We were the one getting jumped.
That's right.
1993-94, we were Ohio State right now, trying to put together a body of work during a probation period that over a multi-year span made us look like a contender. But we were never going to get the 94 national championship, even if we ran the table twice, because they only would have really counted 94, and we couldn't be in a bowl game, and yada, yada, yada. So very similar to Ohio State this year, except Ohio State can be in a bowl game this year. And then there's 2004, of course, when we were just left out. So we've really been... we've been left out before, we've been jumped before, and we've been 20-game winning streak doesn't matter before.
Well,
we've got the perspective of everybody.
And we've been the Florida State situation in 2010. We were that team.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing, isn't it? Since 83, we've been in every one of these scenarios from a different angle.
And the 2004 thing really sticks with me. Like, I'm still bitter about that, and part of it is, like, you know, if somebody else is undefeated and we're not, then I don't have a problem with them going. I just don't.
Yeah, but the 2004 team, we were Auburn then, too. In other words, we had the better schedule that we had beaten, too.
Well, but and again, I agree. We should have gone and we'd have been better than Oklahoma. But, you know, at that point, we could make the argument. Okay, if we and Ohio State both had one loss, then great, let's argue all day.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't. Mm-hmm. So my thing is, let's win our game and not worry about it. And I don't want to see Auburn people spend a bunch of time and energy arguing about Ohio State this week, because if you do, that's a recipe for losing to Missouri.
You're right. Absolutely right. Absolutely right.
All right, so let's talk about Missouri.
All right, let's do it.
SEC championship game, coached by maybe the most boring coach in the SEC, Gary Pinkel. he's not a bad person, but he is a really dry, boring guy. Have you seen Missouri play this year?
Yeah, I've been watching them all year, absolutely.
What do you think? What's your first impression?
I think that they don't have any one really spectacular thing. They are really good at receiver. Their defensive line is really good. Their quarterback does some good things. They've got some pretty good, solid running backs that are kind of no-name, you know, workman-like running backs. They're good or very good everywhere.
That's
with the,
right.
With the potential to be really excellent in a few spots if they, you know, over the next year or so. But they just, it's a combination of them being, they don't really have a glaring weakness anywhere that I've seen that they've been exposed. And they haven't really played as hard of a schedule, right? I mean, they got Texas A&M when the Aggies have been sort of falling apart. If they had played Texas A&M back in September or early October, I mean, I think that game could have been maybe different. But A&M hadn't been beating anybody lately.
No, but I mean, they beat their schedule pretty solidly is the other part. I mean, they didn't, you know, there wasn't a lot of close games.
Yeah, well, they got Georgia when Georgia was all beat up. They got Florida when Florida was all beat up. I mean, their schedule really did lay out for them, and it wasn't anything that they did or could help, but they really caught everybody at the right time all the way down the line.
I agree with that, but they also endured their own things. I mean, their quarterback missed like three and a half games, and they kept winning. I mean, they played with a backup quarterback at some of those games.
Well, he's good.
Well, I mean, he is really good, but I'm just saying, I don't know how many other teams in the SEC or in the top 10 would win, you know, legit SEC games with a backup quarterback. And they did. I mean, he did the job.
Well, I tell you what's scary. Think about this. As good of a defense as Florida has, or had at least, they came out with their backup quarterback in his first start against Florida. And on the first play, they hit like a 50-yard bomb down to like the Florida 30. Mm-hmm. And on their second play, they hit a 30-yard pass for a touchdown. So good quarterbacking and good receivers.
Yeah.
And that scares me to death.
I agree. I mean, their real starting quarterback is back now. He played last week, and he's very good. James Franklin is he's tall. He's a good runner. He's not Nick Marshall, but he's a solid runner. But he's an excellent passer, and he's experienced. He's very cool in the pocket. And they have two really big athletic receivers. Remind me a lot of kind of the LSU receivers over the last 5 or 6 years, which is scary. But
yeah.
I mean, they have between the two big receivers and this guy that plays slot receiver, he basically is – they call him a slot receiver. He's usually like a tight end kind of guy. I mean, all of them are 6'4 or taller.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they got the Washington guys. They're kind of the number one receiver. Then Doriel Green Beckham is kind of a A.J. Green-looking kind of guy. Mm-hmm. They'd love to throw it up to him in the end zone. And then the slot guy is like 6'4", kind of a tight end-looking guy. And you worry about those tall guys matched up against, you know, Auburn's shorter defenders. It's a concern.
You know what I wish?
What?
I wish that we had another week.
Yeah, that's the – well, this is the first thing in this game. We need a bye week so bad right now come down from the Alabama game. That was huge in between Georgia and Alabama, and we really need that week to come down this week. Because I think, you know, we're still going bananas about the Alabama game. You know the players are too. It's human nature. So they really, really, really have to shake that off and focus on Missouri or we're in trouble.
Yeah, and that's going to be hard. I mean, we weren't even thinking in terms of at all thinking about that game. I mean, you know, in other words, we didn't kind of like have it in our pocket.
That's right.
To pull out. It was not on the table at all. And suddenly – oh, my goodness, we have to go play another game in 6 days or seven, you know. So, I mean, you know, you can't even take time to enjoy one of the greatest victories in Auburn history because you got to turn around and play another one of the most important games in Auburn history.
That's right.
So after Georgia and Alabama.
But, I mean, I think Auburn fans need to understand Missouri is a legitimate top 10 team. They only have one loss, and that was a game they were winning pretty solidly at South Carolina. You know, the quarterback who was hurt came back into the game in the fourth quarter, made a bunch of plays and pulled it out. You know, you look at the comparable scores thing, they beat Arkansas State about the same as we did. They, you know, beat Tennessee like a drum. Mm-hmm. It was like 38-3. Like you said, they crushed Florida pretty solidly. Mm-hmm. You know, They beat Ole Miss 24-10 in Oxford. That was a pretty impressive win.
Everybody beat Ole Miss 24-10 in Oxford, though.
Yeah, but
I think Duke beat Ole Miss 24-10 in Oxford.
No, I mean, Ole Miss isn't bad, and I thought they were pretty – I mean, the biggest thing is, you know, holding them to 10 points up there is pretty effective. And then, like you said, A&M is not the same team they were in the year. They kind of got – it's one of the things about Auburn got better and better as the season went along. A&M got worse as the year went
along. Oh, absolutely.
And they really turned into this team where the only thing they do is Manziel run around. Flapping his arms, apparently.
If Texas A&M played Alabama next week – while we were playing Missouri, what would the outcome be?
Alabama beat them by 20.
Yeah, I think so too.
So the other thing, like we talked, you said a minute ago, their defensive line is really good,
mm-hmm.
excellent. I mean, athletic, fast, good guys. I mean, guys are going to play in the NFL. Michael Sam is excellent. The other defensive end is excellent. So I think those are guys that, you know, are going to run sideline to sideline and make plays and maybe. I think it's a situation where we may end up having the most success lining up with kind of power and running right at them with kind of the Cro-Magnon version of Gus's offense.
Which is what we've been using this year pretty much.
Well, but I think even if I think we – any of the speed sweep stuff, I think we're going to have less success than we had against Alabama. How about that? I think they have you know, they have one excellent cornerback. But they have given up a lot of passing yards. So I think, you know, there could be a lot of plays where, you know, maybe Marshall tries to throw it a little bit more. But I think running straight at them over the course of the game, I think we could Auburn's going to be able to have some success.
Do you have a sense of what their secondary is like? Can we throw it all on them, catch them by surprise?
I think we can throw it on them. They have one really excellent cornerback who missed a lot of season, but he's back, and he he's really good. So I think, you know, they'll put him on Coates or whatever, and the other guys are going to have to come through. So.
Put yourself on the Missouri assistant coaching staff for a second. What are you – you're over in Columbia, a couple of hours west of where I live. I didn't dream we'd be playing Missouri before I got to go see them, by the way. My sister's going to be in Atlanta at this game, so shout out to Lisa. I hope you have a good time, and dang it, I wish I was there. Dang it. but put yourself on the Missouri coaching staff. What are you saying in the team meeting when you look at Auburn film as far as getting Missouri ready to play us? What do you think they're saying?
I mean, I think they're saying if I'm Missouri, I'm thinking mm-hmm. we can move the ball on this Auburn team. Mm-hmm. I mean, Missouri has two excellent running backs, the Henry Josie guy that was, again, one of the reasons they were bad last year is he missed last year, the torn up knee, and he's back. He's excellent. He's really fast. I think between him and with those receivers, I think they feel like with those receivers and the quarterback, they'll be able to throw the ball on Auburn, have great success with that, and then mix in the run. I think they feel like they could score a lot of points. I think they feel like they can line up against Auburn's defense and score 30 points. So I think they just feel like their defense needs to make enough plays, give them a chance. Don't let Auburn get wide and get huge, big plays, and just try and be tough enough to force Auburn to grind it out, try and stop them from having 80-yard drives every time, and while Missouri's offense is rolling up and down the field.
This is going to be a high-scoring game?
I think so. I think it's going to be in the 30s probably. So,
is it going to look kind of like maybe the Auburn Virginia game on a little higher level from the Chick-fil-A Bowl a couple years ago?
Yeah, but I mean it could be, and it's not going to be like the Auburn Texas A&M game.
Yeah,
but it could be a little miniature version of that. I mean, I think Missouri is much better on defense.
Much better
than A&M was, but Auburn's offense has gotten better and better since then too. So.
Well, bear in mind, they barely beat Texas A&M last week. It was like 28-21.
They did, but that was their worst performance. And, it was Manziel doing silly stuff, making a couple touchdowns. So.
And flapping.
Flapping his arms. they're a good team. They're a dangerous team. And Auburn's going to have their hands full winning this game. So, and all the focus and all the pressure is on Auburn. Nobody's talking about Missouri versus Ohio State or Missouri in the national championship game or Missouri winning their first SEC title.
Except Jay Jacobs.
All the pressure is on Auburn in this game, which is not a good thing. I think the Missouri people are delighted about that.
Yeah.
They're happy to let Auburn take all the spotlight and all the pressure on the focus. Well, they just stroll in there and try and, you know, beat it out of us.
Did you hear the deal about Missouri tickets?
I saw them, that somebody posted it online. Auburn fans started buying them. So.
They put their SEC allotment on like an open Ticketmaster account, and an Auburn message board found out, and so they sold out like all 16,000 or whatever in 2 hours. Missouri was bragging, hey, we sold out all of our allotment of SEC championship game tickets in like 2 hours, and they're going to get there and look, and their section's going to be like 40% orange and blue. It's just hilarious. I mean, it's going to look like Oregon in Glendale, where it's just orange and blue, and then like a, you know, a few sections of yellow that are really visible. You're going to see a few sections of that Missouri yellow, and then everything else is going to be orange and blue, and I guarantee you. So I just thought that, you know, you're in the SEC now. You can't do this Big 12, you know, put the tickets out for anybody and just hope that Missouri people buy them. You got to be smarter than that, Missouri. I'm sorry. Maybe you've learned a valuable lesson here. John, give me your outcome of this game.
I think Auburn's going to win. I think it's going to be a close, high-scoring game, back and forth, a lot of big plays. I think, you know, Auburn could do enough on offense, running the ball, keeping the ball away from their offense, you know, like 35, 33, something like that.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I'll tell you what, I'm scared to death of them in a way. I'm very nervous about this game. But you know what else? I will not rule anything out anymore. I will not put anything past this team. I have seen the impossible on multiple occasions and been left in abject astonishment, and I will not bet against this team again.
No. But, I mean, if you think about it, compared to other SEC teams, you know, the best defensive lines in the SEC are Missouri, South Carolina, and Auburn. Their defensive line is excellent, and they probably have the, you know, best group of receivers. You say the LSU receivers, Texas A&M really has one good receiver, but, you know, their receivers are excellent. They clearly have more than one quarterback that's pretty good and can play. So I mean, they have a lot of positions where they're very strong. And the receiver is the one that really scares me. I mean, they're like 6'4", 6'5", 6'6". Okay, I mean, I love Chris Davis, but he's not getting any taller between now and Saturday.
His head might swell and make him taller. I don't know. I wouldn't blame him. But,
so it just worries me with them throwing the ball to those guys. I think they're going to do that a lot.
So. Before we get into our last little segment here around the SEC, I know the show's running really long, but come on. Come on, people. You know this is going to run long last time and this time. We just got too much to cover. But I've got to point out real quick. I'm trying to get to Pasadena if we go. Okay. And so hashtag on Twitter, hashtag send van to Pasadena. I'm saying if we sell 400 copies of our either or of our two Auburn books, Decades of Dominance or Season of Our Dreams, by December 31st, I will go to Pasadena if we go to Pasadena. Now, you know, if we sell a bunch of them, raise some money, and we don't go, we go to the Sugar Bowl, I'll go to New Orleans. I'll take the hit.
You're a trooper.
I know. I'll take that burden on. I will go. I will go to Pasadena and be a special correspondent for the War Eagle Reader and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. If we can, because I figure if we sell that many, that'd make enough money to cover a good portion of the expense. See, when we went to Glendale, when my wife and I went to Glendale in 2011, she had an uncle that lived right there in Scottsdale. So we had a free car for the weekend, free lodging. All we had to do was get our tickets and our airline tickets. That was it. You know, they even fed us half the time. So that was, you know, and I still sold like half my comic book collection I used to have to pay for that. because those tickets were not cheap. But I did buy them after LSU, so they're a lot cheaper than most people paid. But for this, we're going to have to pay more top dollar, I'm afraid, like to get a rental car, you know, or a hotel, God help us. So yeah, send Van to Pasadena, buy a copy of Decades of Dominance or Season of Our Dreams. And if John and I do end up, and it's getting increasingly likely that we do end up doing some kind of book out of this season, I'll have on the feet, you know, on the scenes, direct reporting in it, photographs. You know, my wife goes with me, take the big 35 millimeter camera. We'll have good pictures and everything. So send Van to Pasadena, people. War Eagle. Are you with me? Are you behind me, John?
I fully support that.
All right. I guess in our last segment here before we wrap up, we got to look at what else happened in the SEC. Just real quickly, let's run through this.
All right. Florida State crushed Florida. Yes. Pretty predictable that was going to happen. Georgia beat Georgia Tech in overtime after coming back from down big in the first game without Aaron Murray.
Now, look, I didn't see 1 second of that game. What happened? Georgia came back and then...
I didn't see any of it either. I've seen the highlights, but they were down 20 and came back, tied it up, went to overtime, won in overtime.
Dang. Yeah, I haven't even seen a highlight. I haven't heard anybody mention it.
Missouri beat Texas A&M. We talked about that.
Watch that.
And I was watching it kind of the post-Iron Bowl days. You know, it was on, but I didn't absorb everything I saw.
Couldn't really focus.
But, I mean, they really – Texas A&M has kind of devolved into just snap the ball and Johnny Manziel run around. Their offense, I don't think, is very coherent right now.
Flapping.
And their defense is terrible.
Yeah.
It's still terrible. All right, the Egg Bowl on Thursday night, Thanksgiving night, Mississippi State beat Ole Miss. That was kind of an entertaining game.
That was a fun game for a Tuberville-esque, you know, 3-2 game or whatever like it was going to be for a while. That was pretty fun.
It turned out to be good, especially the whole, you know, put Robert Kendiche at running back and then his number was illegal. that stuff was pretty fun.
Who would have expected early in the season that Ole Miss would lose to Mississippi State this year? I mean, it just seemed like Ole Miss was on an upward trajectory and Mississippi State was floundering, you know?
Yep.
There you go.
But you look at Mississippi State, I mean, who did they lose to?
Yeah, I know. Us and Alabama and probably
and
LSU.
Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but you're right. There's something going on there, too, where, you know, Dan Mullen kind of owns them right now. So, and you look at – they get that – Dak Prescott guy coming back. He's good with them, offense. It's going to be tough. LSU beat Arkansas on Friday.
That was a game. I enjoyed the heck out of that game.
So describe your views on the end of that game when the backup quarterback came in. Mettenberger went out of the game, and the backup quarterback led him 99 yards or whatever to beat Arkansas. But
oh, yeah. It kind of blanked. I remember it was a really fun game, and Arkansas like deserved to win or something, but I couldn't remember what happened. Yeah. Oh, yeah, LSU, the backup came in and just marched him down the field, if I remember correctly. It's kind of obscured in my brain now by everything that's happened since then. But I remember thinking, yeah, their backup quarterback just came in and like jump-started the whole offense.
Well, we're all very disappointed that Brett Bielema did not get an SEC win this year.
I know. I was trying to decide which would help us more, for Arkansas to win or LSU, and I finally decided, oh, screw it. I just kind of like to see Arkansas pull this upset. But it is kind of a sad state of affairs when LSU's coach is more sympathetic than Arkansas's coach.
It's true.
I mean, I really like Les Miles more every year. He just gets more entertaining. He's like the crazy uncle. And Bielema is just a jerk, so yeah, I'm glad they got beaten. And it was even more heartbreaking because they were in the game. Though it made me wonder about LSU, that Arkansas was handling them so well. I tell you what, if we played LSU again right now, we'd beat them.
No, I think on a neutral field, a neutral dry field,
no monsoon.
If we played LSU tomorrow. I mean, I think we would have a really good shot at him. I think it would be a very evenly matched game.
Yeah.
I mean, some of college football isn't team A is better than team B,
mm-hmm.
is better than team C. Some of it is a chicken or egg thing.
Yeah.
And like LSU 100% has Texas A&M's number. So some of it is just different teams have different teams' number, and but I think if we played them again, we'd be in good shape.
So. And then what was Tennessee doing and Vanderbilt doing playing a game the week after they played each other? That was just weird.
Well, that was – I thought they would end the season playing each other, but apparently the schedule didn't work out the way.
Yeah.
Vanderbilt played Wake Forest, which was a bizarre non-conference last of the year game.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tennessee beat the crud out of Kentucky.
So what did Tennessee end up at, like 5-7 or something? I mean, something to build on, something to feel a little better about? I did see that Gus is, you know, like 7-1 in the SEC, and all the other brand new coaches are like 2-14 or something like that.
Tennessee's 5-7, 2-6 in the SEC.
Hey, I was right. I just guessed. Okay. Yeah, so 5-7, but seeming like they're in the right direction, right? So.
Yeah, but I mean, you got to look at that team and go, eh, he did okay.
I got to throw one other thing out, Auburn related. I just was out for dinner a while ago before the show, and realized Auburn was playing Iowa State in basketball tonight, and I turned on the ESPN, Watch ESPN app while I'm sitting there at the dinner table, and the second half was just starting. We were already down like 20. We went down like 26. I turned it back off. That's the state of Auburn basketball right now. I made it through like four possessions, and I turned it back off, and so I just don't know. I hate to kind of end the triumphal Iron Bowl edition on a bummer, but – Auburn basketball, dear God.
We got plenty of time to talk about that.
All right. Back to the triumphal.
One thing that we're going to have to do on the triumphal side is down the road in a week or two when we have some time after the season's over, before the bowl game, I'm going to have to eat some crow on Trey Mason, big time. And we're going to have a very serious and lengthy Trey Mason, where does he fit in Auburn history? In the pantheon of running back discussion, because I really kind of didn't give him enough credit earlier, and he has carried us the second half this year and done a great job.
Mm-hmm. No, I think so, yeah. It'll be interesting to kind of evaluate when it's all said and done where he fits in, see how many yards he has, and understand that he's been the workhorse, the backbone. And he's such a likable guy, too, you know. I mean, it's just he's such a great player and such a good guy, so that's really cool. And that's a good triumphal thing to bring us kind of in on. This has been our almost 2-hour edition, but my gosh, again, you know, the we just beat Alabama, number one ranked Alabama, so I think we can be – I could almost break this in half and have two episodes, but I think I'm just going to put it out there like it is. The other shows on the network are going to hate us because we're chewing up almost 2 hours of broadcast time, but – any last thoughts on this monumental victory and this monumental season of not of our dreams, but we couldn't have even dreamed of it?
No, I think, you know, the only thing better than like beating Alabama is, you know, beating number one, 2-time undefeated national champion Alabama on a really dumb decision by Nick Saban.
There's just nothing that's not perfect about the whole thing.
That's pretty much it.
Good Lord. All right, triumphalism, ode to joy, Beethoven, kick it in. Bring in the symphony. I couldn't be happier. Whatever happens with Missouri and the dome happens. It's all like we said. We've been swimming in gravy for weeks.
That's right.
This is a cherry on top of the whipped cream on top of the gravy. However unappetizing that may sound. There's nothing left to be said, John, but War Eagle.
War Eagle, man.
Auburn's going to win the football game! Auburn's going to win the football game!
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Auburn!